Any advisor who's thought seriously about leaving has run the same film. You resign, the phone goes silent, and the clients you've served for 15 years shrug and stay with the logo. That film feels like foresight. It's mostly fear. Today I'll show you how to read your own book name by name and find out who would actually follow you before you bet anything on the answer. Quick note before we get into it. Advisor Growth Lab is not a broker dealer, and everything here is for educational purposes only. It's not individualized legal, tax, or investment advice. Every advisor's situation is different. So treat this as a map, not a set of directions. If the thing holding you at a firm you've outgrown is whether your clients would come with you, this episode is for you. We'll cover the three pieces of evidence already in your book, who legally owns your clients, what the broker protocol actually lets you take, and when you're allowed to say anything at all. Start with the number you won't get. Nobody can promise you a retention percentage, and you should be suspicious of anyone who does. Your book isn't an average. An industry statistic describes other people's practices, not yours. What I can tell you is how ordinary this move is. Diamond Consultants' annual transition report counted more than 11,000 experienced advisors changing firms in 2025, up about 16% from the year before. That tells you the move is ordinary. It doesn't tell you how any of them turned out, and I'm not going to pretend it does. And why do clients tend to follow the advisor? Because loyalty attaches to the person who picks up the phone, the one who talked them off the ledge in a down market, the one who sat with them after a parent died and helped sort the estate. Institutions don't do any of that. People do. One caveat. It only holds where a real relationship exists. A client who sees you as interchangeable with the firm's platform is loyal to the platform, which is why the next part deserves most of your attention. Read the evidence your book already contains. Three lenses applied name by name. The first lens is revenue mix. A recurring advisory fee is a decision the client renews every quarter. So a book built on recurring fees is full of clients who keep choosing you. Transactional business behaves differently. The relationship wakes up when there's a trade and goes dormant in between. And dormant relationships are the ones a change of letterhead can end. The second lens is who hired whom. For each client, one question: did they hire you or did they hire the firm? A personal referral where somebody said, "You should talk to my guy," hired you. A client who followed you from a previous firm already answered once with their feet. On the other side, the account you inherited from a retiring colleague or the walk-in who chose the branch for the name over the door. Those clients hired the institution. You were the person it assigned. They may value you now, but their starting loyalty ran to the brand, and some of it still does. The third lens is depth, and it catches what the first two miss. Does the client call you directly or the 800 number? Do you know the spouse, the kids, the business? Have you been through something real together? A market drop that had them panicking, a business sale, an inheritance? Crisis is where advisory relationships either deepen or reveal themselves as shallow. And the ones that deepen travel. You already know the answer for every name on your list. Run all three lenses and you get something better than any percentage, a list. This cluster follows almost anywhere. That cluster is genuinely uncertain. That last cluster was never really yours. The question stopped being a coin flip you feel in your stomach and became an inventory you can plan around. Before you act on that inventory, you need the ownership answer, and there are two at once. Contractually, in most employee channels, the firm owns the client relationship, your employment agreement, and the non-solicitation language you signed maybe years ago, maybe without reading it closely, say so. Relationally, no contract can assign trust. The firm can own the account. It can't own the reason the client stays. That gap is why transitions work at all and why they're contested and occasionally litigated, which is where the broker protocol comes in. Created back in 2004 by Smith Barney, Merrill Lynch, and UBS to protect clients' privacy and their freedom to choose their advisor. Where it applies, it's narrow. The official protocol text spells out exactly 5 pieces of client information a departing advisor may take, and only for clients they personally service: name, address, phone number, email address, and account title. Nothing else. No account numbers, no statements, no copies of anything. Take more than the 5 and you forfeit the protection, which is the fastest way to turn a clean resignation into a courtroom. The mechanics matter too. You generally resign in writing to local branch management and leave the firm a copy of the client information you're taking. And there are 2 lists, not 1. Get them backwards and you have the lawsuit. The list you carry out has the 5 fields and no account numbers. The copy you leave behind at the branch has the 5 fields plus the account numbers. Say that back to yourself. Account numbers stay with the firm, never with you. Above all, the protocol only covers you when both firms, the one you're leaving and the one you're joining, are signatories. It's voluntary. More than 2,000 firms were on the administrator's October 2025 list, but membership shifts and some of the biggest names stepped in and then stepped right back out around 2017 and 2018. So check the current list for both firms. Never assume. And if the protocol doesn't cover your move, your employment agreement becomes the governing document. Now, the question everyone wants to ask first: when can you tell your clients? Later than instinct says. Announcing a move before you resign or telling a favorite client to hang on because something's coming can undo the protections you were counting on and hand your firm its opening. The advisors who get this wrong aren't reckless people. They treated the client conversation as the first step because it was the one they cared about most. Treat it as the last step. Read what you signed. Confirm whether the protocol covers both firms. Build the plan with your new firm's transition team and get a securities attorney in your corner. Most advisors don't have one on call, and that's the point. The firm across the table has experienced counsel. You want your own before you act, not after. And when the day finally comes, the conversation is simpler than you're imagining. Advisors dread it because they assume it's a pitch. It's 3 steps. Tell your clients you've made a change you believe will serve them better. Tell them you'd be grateful to keep working together. Make the next steps easy. Nothing clever in it. No pressure and no criticizing your old firm. Disparagement is beneath the relationship and creates risk you don't need. Clients can feel the difference between an advisor who's inviting them and an advisor who's selling them, and the invitation is what earns the yes. Some clients won't come, and the lenses already told you who, mostly the transactional and inherited accounts, the ones whose relationship with the firm happened to include you. Seeing that in advance takes most of the sting out of it. One more point before I wrap up. If you want to know where you actually stand before you talk to anyone, we built a short assessment for exactly this. 6 questions, about 2 minutes, and it points you to a private conversation or the research that fits your situation, including the client question. It's free on our website at advisorgrowthlab.com. No call, no pressure. Read your own book before you bet on it. Clear eyes first, the move second. I'll see you tomorrow.